panting up the slopes, with the wind brewing in the trees, and the mountain lion like a row of aged teeth decaying, and the cold air and hunger nibbling at my warmth, I think of the jagged beauty that disturbs the neatly ordered boxes of my mind. And I think of the rich irrelevance around me. And I know that I will never smooth the scarred and pimpled visage of the earth, nor rearrange the scattered stars and jeweled patterns. I have no secrets from the mocking peak. This poem was written by the Indian poet Ananta Madhavan, and its title, Chaos, is our theme for today's program. We often associate the word chaos with, at best, disorder and disorganization. After events such as the shooting in Las Vegas this fall, we see the term used in the darker context of turmoil, havoc, or bedlam. It has the suggestion of violent undertones at times, which may be why the word was in one newspaper article after the other in the aftermath of the shooting. It was also used to describe the devastating wildfire in California this past week. Even the words that are used to describe chaos are somewhat chaotic. Consider the word amok, which means chaotic or out of control. Something that has run amok has devolved into wildness. The German term for a shooter like the one encountered in Las Vegas is an amokläufer or an amok runner. However, chaos has a different meaning in physics. Chaos refers to behavior so unpredictable as to appear random. Whether we are speaking of the Chinese theory where chaos and order are related and complement each other, the ancient Greek concept of chaos as that which precedes order, that which order comes out of, or the 21st century field of scientific inquiry called chaos theory, we are speaking of a concept which by its very nature is ill-defined. We are fascinated by chaos because it shows a universe supposedly bound by natural laws and deterministic to be at the same time subject to randomness, disorder, complexity. Carrie Thornley wrote, quote, "What we imagine is order is merely the prevailing form of chaos," end quote. As our computers make it possible to perform an incredibly large number of calculations in a few seconds, we can look at such things as weather, crime, epidemics, or market fluctuations in a different way. Mathematics can help us understand things in a manner in which other disciplines have not been able to interpret data. Chaos theory teaches us that remarkably simple mathematical systems can still show complex, unstable behavior, and that in chaos there is an incredibly sensitive dependence on initial conditions. We still struggle with the conceptual tools to grasp this. Benoit Mandelbrot, the Polish-born French mathematician who developed the field of fractal geometry, has become a major figure in chaos theory. We will listen to a clarinet composition today influenced by fractal geometry. We can find art, literature, biology textbooks, economic theories, and interpretations of crime statistics or weather phenomena, which are all dependent upon fractals. Chaos seems to become, in this light, a necessary part of creating order out of disorder, indeed of interpreting disorder, and therefore comprehending complexity where randomness has proved our simple models to be inadequate. As a pre-Socratic philosopher Heraclitus wrote, quote, "Opposition brings concord. Out of discord comes the fairest harmony," end quote. This seems to be an important conceptual framework in the 21st century. Whether we are speaking of government, human relationships, the human body, weather, the stock market, baseball, or the fine arts, we are struck by the randomness which seems to come from nowhere and which not only catches us off guard, but shakes our foundations. What we thought was simple and knowable becomes complex and unmanageable. We find it difficult to find our footing in a universe which is not always subject to those natural laws which we have come to depend upon. It is an uncertain time when we acquire more knowledge. We are in that situation which everyone from Socrates to Dr. Faustus has despaired of. We have learned so much only to learn that we know nothing. How much can our perspective of the world be changed once we have the mathematical tools to look at human history through the lens of chaos theory? The Harvard psychology professor Steven Pinker has shown us that despite our perception of our world growing more violent, we have in fact become less violent over time. The decline of violence is a fractal phenomenon, Pinker writes, visible at the scale of millennia, centuries, decades, and years. It applies over several orders of magnitude of violence, from genocide to war to rioting to homicide, to the treatment of children and animals. and it appears to be a worldwide trend, though not a homogeneous one. The second law of thermodynamics states that there is a natural tendency of a system to degenerate into a more disordered state. In simple terms, you cannot unscramble an egg. David Christian, an Australian philosopher, speaks of the creation of complexity in our universe. In certain pockets of our universe, Christian says, there appear pockets of Goldilocks conditions, not too hot, not too cold, just right, for the creation of complexity. This makes it possible for slightly more complex things to appear, and complexity builds stage by stage. When these new things appear, it is called a threshold moment. During these threshold moments, the Goldilocks conditions become more stringent, and it becomes harder to create complexity. The story of the universe creating complexity, despite the second law of thermodynamics, is a story of a complexity which creates vulnerability and fragility, Christian says. Whether we are talking about weather, economics, or crime wave, we do have new coping tools when we utilize the conceptual tools offered us by chaos and complexity. We realize the systems that we have taken for granted as being tameable or easily comprehended and manipulated are actually dynamic systems where input can give us unforeseeable output. One obvious example is global warming. Many meteorologists have renamed the phenomenon global weirding. Yes, there would be complex, chaotic change in this dynamic system, but what exactly, we can't say for sure. Not one linear warming trend, but bizarre changes, which we cannot predict. So it is in our society, in our government, and in ourselves, just as it is in the natural environment. There is an untamable dynamic system we have only begun to develop the conceptual tools to comprehend. Today we will hear from a physicist, a philosopher, and two musician composers about different facets of that which we call chaos. I'm Julie Bennett-Hume, co-host and producer of River City Chautauqua. Richard Gordon is a man of many facets, a scientist with a PhD in theoretical physics and 24 peer-reviewed publications, a recording artist that has released 16 albums and EPs since the start of his career, a record producer who has produced 26 albums and EPs for 15 different artists, the owner of an indie record label that has done 56 releases in the last 10 years, the publisher of a daily music blog that is part of the Universal Music Group blog network, and finally, a painter with a unique eye for form, texture, and composition. As a scientist, Gordon's concentration has been the field of complex systems theory. He has worked on modeling financial systems, hurricanes, and climate change, large-scale distributed computer networks, and cybersecurity to prevent persistent adaptive threats. The majority of Richard's scientific work has been focused on the field of artificial neural networks. These are intelligent computer systems based on the human brain that utilize artificial neurons and interconnectivity to learn rather than being programmed. Gordon has done theoretical work in the development of learning algorithms and advanced neural network architectures, as well as applied work utilizing neural network to solve non-rule-based problems. He was one of the speakers at the first TED Oberlin Park conference in October 2012, where his talk was about the development and application of intelligent systems to solve complex problems in cybersecurity. An added note, Richard is having a solo art exhibition all the month of October at Salon Kitsch in downtown Overland Park. His artist reception will be Friday, October 20th from 5 to 9 p.m.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Chaos on KKFI Radio. I want to give a big thank you to the station and the hosts of River City Chautauqua for inviting me to talk about this fascinating topic of chaos. My name is Richard Gordon, and I'm a physicist whose specialty is complex systems theory. Chaos is a subset of the science of complexity, but also spawned the science of complexity. There's a truism about writing books on science for general audiences that says your readership will be cut in half for every mathematical equation that is used. So tonight is a math-free zone, and you can think of what I present as skipping a stone across the pond of chaos. We'll look at what chaos is and how it manifests itself in the world around us. Though before we talk about what exactly chaos is, let's start at the beginning with a bit of history. In the late 19th century, a French physicist named Henri Poincaré observed that, and I quote him here, "a very small cause, which escapes our notice, determines a considerable effect that we cannot fail to see. And then we say that the effect is due to chance. If we knew exactly the laws of nature and the situation of the universe at that initial moment, we could predict exactly the situation of that same universe at a succeeding moment. What Poincaré refers to as a universe, we now think of as systems. Modern chaos theory really got its start with the 1963 publication of Deterministic Nonperiodic Flow, a paper by MIT atmospheric scientist Edward Lorenz. In the paper, Lorenz revisits and extends the ideas of Poincaré. Let me quote a bit from Lorenz's paper. "Two states, differing by imperceptible amounts, may eventually evolve into two considerably different states. If, then, there is an error whatever in observing the present state, and in any real system such errors seem inevitable, an acceptable prediction of an instantaneous state in the distant future may well be impossible." Lorenz was referring to the weather prediction in his paper, but this notion of there being any error in the initial observation of a system leading to an inability to predict a future state of the system is the foundation on which chaos theory is built. We now call this sensitive dependence on initial conditions. When people think about chaos, most people have heard of the butterfly effect, the idea that a butterfly flapping its wings in Australia could cause a thunderstorm in Kansas. While an obvious exaggeration, it does point to the concepts and the underpinnings of what is chaos and what chaos means in physics and the physical sciences. Chaos refers to systems whose behavior is so unpredictable that it appears to be random. "Appears to be random" is the key phrase in that sentence. What these systems really exhibit is the aforementioned sensitive dependence on initial conditions. This describes a special type of system that physicists refer to as nonlinear dynamical systems. Let me explain this a bit. In a linear system, there is easy predictability, a straight line of cause to effect. If X happens, then Y will follow. And if Y happens, then Z will follow that. Predictability is precise, with a linear system moving from one state to another through a series of sequential predictable steps. In a nonlinear dynamical system, sensitive dependence on initial conditions means that a small change in one state of a system can result in large differences in the latter state, hence our dreaded butterfly effect. There is an inherent unpredictability in chaotic systems, stemming from the fact that we cannot measure the initial conditions accurately enough to be able to predict what the future state of the system will look like. When I talk about nonlinear dynamical systems, a logical question is, what types of systems am I referring to? Nature is not orderly, and neither are our human-created institutions. As Lorenz so aptly showed, and as we experience every time we look at a forecast, weather is a classic system showing sensitive dependence on initial conditions. But there are many others. Many other systems that appear to be random, but yet follow deterministic rules, that if we could only measure their initial conditions accurately enough, would yield to prediction of their future states. World economies and capital markets are such institutions. Much of economic theory is built on the idea of equilibrium. This, simply stated, is the idea that if there are no outside or exogenous influences, then the system will be at rest. This is the economist's definition of equilibrium. Everything balances. Supply equals demand. What we actually find, however, is economic systems that are full of outside or exogenous influences, that are far from equilibrium, that manifest sensitive dependence on initial conditions, that manifest chaos. The idea of equilibrium has been linked to the ecology of the living world. But what we actually see is that nature abhors equilibrium. If a species or an environmental system is to survive, it must evolve. It must be, as Russian physicist Ilya Prigozhin states, far from equilibrium. The moon is in equilibrium, and the moon is a dead world. These same thoughts of systems far from equilibrium, nonlinear dynamical systems, systems displaying sensitive dependence on initial conditions, can be extended to societies and cultures. Whether it be the ancient culture of Chaco Canyon in New Mexico or our present-day world politics, this idea of sensitive dependence on initial conditions comes to play. Think about how social orders interact, whether they be the complex social interactions between students at a middle school or the intricacies of office politics. Nonlinear dynamics rears its head. We even see the existence of chaos and nonlinear dynamics in the brain. And this work has given rise to new ideas about the cause and manifestation of conditions such as epilepsy and depression, which may actually be associated with a lack of chaos in the brain rather than its presence. This then brings us to one final point about chaos theory, the ideas of attractors. An attractor is a state to which a system eventually settles, depending on the system's properties. That is, the state to which a system is attracted, given its initial conditions. A nonlinear dynamical system will exhibit multiple attractors, which are part and parcel of their complex behavior. It's hard to discuss whether chaos leads to attractors or whether attractors lead to chaos, as they are integral concepts and define the properties of nonlinear dynamical systems. Attractors then lead us to some of the most beautiful ideas associated with chaos, how chaos affects the geometry of nature. Fractals are infinitely complex, never-ending patterns that are self-similar across different scales. They are created by repeating a simple process over and over in an ongoing feedback loop. Driven by recursion, fractals are images of nonlinear dynamical system. They are the pictures of chaos. Another example of the beauty that chaos can exhibit in nature is the complexity that is displayed in the flocking behavior of some birds. Starlings, blackbirds, and shorebirds form spectacular irregular masses moving through the sky. While appearing to move in complete unison at speeds of 40 miles per hour or more in a dense group and separated by little more than a body length, they are the living geometric manifestation of chaos. There are many other examples. Cellular automata, which are computer systems that through a few simple rules can produce the complexities of artificial life and artificial ecosystems. The example of artificial neural networks, computer systems modeled on the human brain, and what I've spent much of my professional life working on, that have led to the complexity of AI, artificial intelligence, that we see having a huge impact on our future world. In the end, what's important to come away with is that systems we have discussed, weather, markets, economies, societies, politics, social interactions, and the brain, are but a few examples of the myriad of ways that chaos, nonlinear dynamics, affect the world and the universe around us. If you give it some thought, I'm sure you will be able to come up with other systems whose behavior will manifest in chaos. I hope this talk has sparked your imagination. I hope it has sparked your interest in chaos theory and how it shapes the world around us. Thank you to all for listening to my musings tonight and to KKFI and the River City Chautauqua for inviting me. Good night.
This is Scott Easterday for River City Chautauqua. Charles Dodge wrote Viola Elegy in 1987 for viola and electronic tape. The electronic tape was generated by using a mathematical algorithm following a set of numbers called a fractal in geometry. The Reverend Dr. White Frizzell is a composer, professor, filmmaker, performance and installation artist, journalist, producer, and radio host. He recorded and produced Elegy in 1989. and Dr. Thomas Aber studied bass clarinet and clarinet at Juilliard and UMKC and performs the solo clarinet in Elegy on this recording by Dwight Frizzell and the Myth Science Ensemble CD, Generative Worlds.
You're about to hear one of the very first musical compositions that was composed or generated by fractals. These mathematical objects, they call them, that when they are set in process, kind of a reiterative process, they create these kind of paisley-like patterns quite often. The Mandelbrot set, one of the first guys that developed it, that's what they look like, paisleys. And they're self-similar across scale. As far as you go in, as far as you go out, macro and micro, they're always different but self-similar, like so many things in nature, like the branching lines of trees, for example. Charles Dodge was the one that composed this back in 1989, and he brought it to Tom?
Well, I was asked to play it, and when I got the piece, I started working on it, and it was very different from the standard new music idiom of the time, which was still very complex and angular in its sounds, very rhythms that were both difficult and then, when you listen to them, impenetrable in terms of hearing a pattern. But the Dodge piece seemed to just meander. Small intervals, not big intervals, which are also a part of the new music idiom at the time. Small, meandering little cells that seem to have no particular organization or intent, just moved along in a kind of vaguely regular but not entirely regular way against a swirling electronic background.
Well, and when I listened to the piece, well, maybe I'd go back to when you performed it, because that was in 1989 at this concert at the Conservatory of Music here in Kansas City, and you worked right with Dodge. So Dodge had brought this piece, had never been performed, and at that point he called it Clarinet Elegy, and you actually performed it on bass clarinet, like this recording we're going to hear.
Right.
And the recording, by the way, was made like 2 days or something like that, right after that premiere performance. I took you in the studio. I was kind of moved by this piece because, to me, it wasn't as meandering. It had this presence, this lyricism in it.
It did, but it did not have any sense of being designed. To me, it had no sense of conscious design.
When I listen to it, I hear it differently, and yeah. I hear this kind of an intelligent presence, this self-similarity, it's almost like a design or something, a lyricism. Part of that might be what you bring to it when you play it. You've played it now over a period of years. I should say this piece has become kind of a computer music, a computer music classic. So he composed it by the notes are generated by fractal mathematics. He sonified those, or he set the parameters first for an electronic realization. Then he made another realization of it for the solo part. And being that the two parts, the relationship between the solo part and the electronic accompaniment is a fractal, self-similar relationship, kind of in a sense as if they're on different scales. Also, I think you bring some lyricism to it.
Well, that could be, again, the pitch choice was random. It was not made by Dodge other than application of formulas. So that may be what I'm saying. A composer, very distinctly, one who works in other ways, often very distinctly chooses certain pitches for their relationship to the previous pitch.
Right.
But this piece did not do that.
Well, he turned
that. Other than using a formula.
Yeah, but that is very determined in a sense, you could say. In other words.
Well, then we're dealing with, is it chaos or not, if it's determined?
Well, it was determined by setting this process in motion. It is a particular manifestation of this reiterative process itself. And so it is a fixed piece that has a certain kind. I've heard you perform it several times. It has great continuity, particularly the way you perform it. And it has a kind of presence, I think, that emerges from it that is mysterious, because knowing that it wasn't a conscious intention of Dodge, all he did is set the parameters. He's quite good at that, by the way. He set the parameters in such a way, I think, for maximum musical effect or good musical effect. Now, the notes you play are particular, don't they? When you're playing the piece, you see in the score the electronic parts, and the notes are specifically written out in your part, not the rhythm values, but the notes are written out, and they are to be kept in sync with the electronics.
Yeah, they're taken from the electronics to form a sort of a line that is in the electronic part.
Yeah.
It's sort of the most present sound at any moment is in the clarinet line.
So there really isn't improvisation involved.
Oh, no, not at all.
In the performance of it. And watching you perform it, I know it's demanding. You usually have the music spread out on like three music stands, so you have it continue, so you don't have to change pages. And I've seen the score that you play with. I think I have a copy of it with your notes on it, so that you have timings to help keep yourself in the right place relation to the electronics. Plus, you have the electronics there, so you have kind of two ways to keep yourself in the in sync with Dodge's music, his score.
Yeah. And the title of the piece, Elegy, sort of gives an indication of the likely mood from the very beginning. Again, I can hear what I do, I can hear it in the electronics, mm-hmm. which has this feeling of being just in a giant field of floating sound. Mm-hmm. And again, that's why I say it does not sound contrived at all.
Right, it's very natural.
Or does not sound determined in the, oh, I think this note should be here now. It doesn't sound that way in the way that someone working outside of, say, a mathematical system would do it.
Yeah. It is mathematical music, but it's being generated by the Mandelbrot set.
Not in a very patterned way where you see a regular pattern or you see different sizes of mm-hmm. things. It's just it's all the distinctions are blurred.
Well, I get a sense of another kind of presence or something in the piece, something that it's ephemeral, but it might seem purposeful, you know. It's interesting to think of it in relation to chaos. This piece, though, has this haunting quality that since 1989, we've staged it many times. It's in our current play with the Myth Science Ensemble. It comes out of chaos studies, the whole kind of the study of systems and randomness and chaos.
Thank you. Thank you.
John Simmons is professor of philosophy at the University of Kansas. He's the author of numerous books and articles in philosophy of mind, epistemology, philosophy of science, and metaphysics. His most recent book, Formal Reasoning, A Guide to Critical Thinking, appeared in August of 2017. He serves as a member of the Institut International de Philosophie and has taught philosophy around the world, including at Peking University in Beijing, at the University of Lisbon, and at the Federal University of Bahia in Salvador, Brazil. His current interests include working to understand the effects of technological and social changes on the quality and significance of human lives.
The Roman poet Ovid, writing 8 years after the birth of Christ, provided us with his portrait of chaos. In Dryden's translation of the Metamorphoses, Ovid's most important work, the poet describes a time before creation. Before the seas and this terrestrial ball, and heaven's high canopy that covers all, one was the face of nature, if a face, rather a rude and indigested mass, a lifeless lump, unfashioned and unframed, of jarring seeds and justly chaos named. Ovid was drawing from a Greek philosophical tradition whose view of chaos would soon be reinterpreted by Christian and other monotheistic traditions. By the 2nd century AD, the Church Fathers, the early and formative sources of Christian theology, had outlined a view of creation whereby God wills the cosmos into being, not out of chaos, but ex nihilo, out of nothing. This understanding of creation was a fundamental break with traditional Greek and other pre-Christian views of the origin of the world. Greek philosophers, without exception, held that out of nothing, nothing comes, ex nihilo nihil fit. Greek creation stories assumed that the original cosmos was in a disordered primal condition. Chaos was understood to be the primordial stuff that had the potential to be the world we see around us, but which existed in an unformed condition, waiting the influence of some force that brings order and pattern. Chaos was tied to arbitrariness, chance, and disorder. And by contrast, according to the Greeks, the natural order as we find it is filled with purpose. For the Greeks, nature is a rational and ordered system that can be understood by human reason. The world is fundamentally intelligible. For Christians, God speaks the universe into existence. The Word, or the Logos, is identified with Jesus Christ, who embodies God's active participation in the structure of cosmic and human history. The identification of Jesus with the Logos connects the intelligibility of the natural world and the arc of human history towards salvation. Divine Logos, the rational principle ordering the cosmos, precedes the creation of the cosmos, and in this sense, contradicts the pre-Christian concept of chaos. This is part of the reason that the Church Fathers rejected the doctrine of chaos as they found it in the Greeks. They understood it not only as contrary to their religious faith, but also as a philosophical mistake. To understand why, let's think about what it means to make chaos the principle from which order emerges. Most non-monotheistic religions or traditions saw the gods themselves as coming into existence out of a disordered state at some point over the course of natural history. In many traditions, water or a cosmic egg of some sort brings the universe and its gods into existence. In the Rig Veda, the source of the cosmos is Hiranyagarbha, the golden womb. The Upanishads tell us more about the golden womb, describing how it floated in emptiness for eons before splitting in two to form heavens and earth. The gods appear later than the rest of the world, including us human beings. Traditional mythological accounts of creation contain a brute assertion of a starting point Or to put it another way, they present creation as a brute fact that admits of no further explanation. The insight of the monotheistic tradition is that at the heart of being, perhaps we could say at the heart of chaos, is non-arbitrariness. Monotheism recognizes that a principle of order precedes disorder and arbitrariness. In Christianity, as I understand it, that fundamental principle of non-arbitrariness is love. However, the ultimate order and purpose at the heart of being can be understood in a variety of ways. So why should we accept the idea of a purpose to creation over and above the simple fact of being? Can't we just agree with more traditional accounts that say, for example, that the golden womb or the quantum foam simply existed, and all this talk of purpose or love is delusional? Well, let's say we completely reject non-arbitrariness and insist that the universe is simply a product of chance or randomness. On this view, there are no purposes and there's no agency in nature, and genuine chaos reigns. The trouble with purposelessness is that it's very hard to pin down precisely what it could be. Specifically, philosophers and mathematicians have a very hard time defining randomness, and although we do find aspects of nature behaving in stochastic or unpredictable ways, knowing precisely what randomness is has proven to be a deep technical and conceptual challenge. Perhaps we will have someday a Newton or an Einstein who defines exactly what it means for something to be random, but for now, we wait. Nevertheless, some aspects of our world are unpredictable in principle. For example, in radioactive elements like uranium, energy is released from unstable atomic nuclei in a variety of forms, constituting what we experience as radiation. Alpha particles, gamma particles, neutrinos, electrons, and other subatomic particles are released from the nuclei of these atoms in ways that contemporary physicists understand very well. One fact about this process is that, at the level of the individual atomic nucleus, radioactive decay occurs unpredictably. It's striking to note, though, that in large collections of atoms, we have a very good handle on the rate at which nuclei decay. Radioactive half-life is the measure of the rate at which the unstable nuclei of particular elements decay. So while we cannot tell when a single nucleus will decay, we can predict the rate for a collection of nuclei to a very high degree of precision. We don't know exactly what it means for something to be random, but when we say that the radioactive decay of the nucleus is random, what we mean is something like, we know that it's unpredictable. Back in the 1980s, William Poundstone asked us to imagine using some repeated iterations of a random process, a random natural process like this, for example, as the basis for the generation of a TV show. So here's how we could do it. Let's say that we had some unpredictable event whose result could be measured. The result could be, for example, represented by some color in a pixel on the TV. Each pixel would be colored sequentially depending on the result of the random process. Now, normally, all we would see on this TV would be static. However, if the sequence resulted from a genuinely random process, it would feature every finite combination of patterns. We can be confident of this because a number built from an infinite stream of randomly selected digits will contain every finite sequence of digits. What this means for our TV screen is that every possible image and every possible sequence of images will appear on the screen given sufficient time. Of course, the time that this would take would involve many times longer than the history of the universe. Nonetheless, all possible finite sequences will appear. All patterns, all possible movies, all possible TV shows, the TV show of your life will appear. In fact, the TV show of all of your possible lives, from every possible camera angle will eventually appear if the process that generates the sequence of pixels is genuinely random. So in a sense, total arbitrariness ends up being indistinguishable from the complete set of all forms of order and purposiveness. Contrary to the view that sees chaos or chance as incapable of producing interesting or complex phenomena, what we call randomness is itself the very source, or can be seen as the very source, of all possible order. In this sense, order is inescapable. It is built into the very heart of disorder.
This concludes our program for today. A special thank you to Dr. Dwight Frizzell, Dr. Thomas Eber, Dr. John Simmons, Dr. Rick Gordon, Dr. Elaine Mahan, Scott Tischner, and Bill Claus. Next month's theme will be the American Dream. Thank you for listening.